We are in Genesis chapter 14, and I want us to begin again today at verse number 5. We laid a lot of groundwork last time for this invasion of Mesopotamian military forces into the southern Jordan Valley, the Dead Sea region. It's all about a reestablishment of dominance by the Mesopotamians over Sodom, Gomorrah, Zeboim, Admah, and Bela, the five cities of the plain. They had been in control of this region economically for 13 years, so before Abram ever came. But in the 13th year, the people of the plain, which we're talking about the Dead Sea Valley, they decided they don't want to pay anymore. And it, as I shared with you from the book of Ezekiel last time, it seems as these people were exceptionally selfish, very self-centered. They didn't even want to help their own local poor people, and they certainly didn't want to be paying to some foreign national group. So they quit paying, and in the 14th year, that's when the Mesopotamians show up in force to bring them back in line. Now, I believe that that happened in 2091 BC. I think a pretty good indication that's when it was. Now, on the way, the Mesopotamians would have followed the Euphrates River west-northwest to begin with, because that's the normal path for them to travel. Then when they got to the Balik River tributary area, that's when they would have turned southward toward Canaan and would have got on the Royal Road, the King's Highway, that passes to the east of the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan Valley and the Dead Sea, and eventually it goes down and hooks up with an east-west road that goes across the north part of the Gulf of Aqaba and heads over to Egypt. And so they're following this royal road, and they have in mind that they're going to control the fringes of the region around the lower Dead Sea area, the lower Jordan Valley, which is very prosperous at this time. This is before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. It's like the Garden of Eden. It's like the Nile Delta in greenery. So as they're passing along the King's Highway, about 25 miles east of the Sea of Galilee, they run into a group of giants. That's what it says. Verse 5 of Genesis 14, in the 14th year, Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him came, and they defeated the Rephaim, or giants, as the Greek text says here, in Ashtaroth-Karnaim. We remember that the giants first come up into the Genesis story back in chapter 6, before the flood, when some of the fallen angels were taking some of the women from humanity, and they were using them for some sort of breeding program of hybrids. That seems to be the most natural understanding of the passage there in Genesis chapter 6. But we were also told at the same time that these giants, these Nephilim, or these Rephaim, they were in existence before the flood and after. So it would appear that at least some of these fallen angels are back in the genetic manipulation process again. Maybe they're trying to be much more careful about it this time around, but they do have some of these Rephaim that are taking up habitation among the inhabitants of the world. So these Rephaim at Ashtaroth Garnaim, they are beat down. They are defeated by the Mesopotamian forces. We don't know where they went off to, those that survived. My guess is they probably went to the other side of the Jordan. Because guess what? When the Israelis show up several hundred years later, the giants are living in Canaan. And that's the other side of the Jordan from here. All right, so from Ashtaroth Garnaim, the Mesopotamian army keeps going southward, probably for a couple more days of travel. And now they run into Zuzim, or Zamzumim, in Ham, which we don't know exactly where it's at, but we can guess, based on the other places, it must be somewhere east of the Jordan Valley. And so they defeat this bunch of giants as well. And then they go a little bit farther south to Shavet Kiriathayim, which we know is east of the Dead Sea Basin. And there they run into and defeat the Emim, which are also described elsewhere in Moses' writings as part of the Anakim, who are part of the Rephaim, that these guys are the giants of old. Now, when we say giants, don't necessarily assume they're all monstrous in size. That's a more modern concept of giants. Some of them probably were pretty good-sized. But gigantes, which is the source word for giant, it's a Greek word. It has the idea of earth-born. And so it goes back to the whole sense of the fallen angels monkeying around with the human genome so that they could have their own people on planet Earth to be used for their purposes. All right, so the Mesopotamian army runs into and defeats three distinct groups of giants on the east side of the Jordan Valley. Then, verse 6, it says they engaged and defeated the Horites in their hill country of Seir as far as El Paran on the borders of the wilderness. Now, Seir is the mountainous region that goes from just about equal to the south basin of the Dead Sea, about halfway south toward the Gulf of Aqaba, the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba. And Petra, which is pretty famous, is part of this same region. Now, these Horites, which seems to be a word that has something to do with being white, they're living in a country called Seir, which means shaggy or hairy, and they've got control of it. It's possible that this is another group of Rephaim, of giants, although you can't prove that from any other passages. The Horites will eventually be taken over by Esau, and he will take it over a sly way by marrying into the family of the Horites and then becoming their leader whenever his father-in-law dies. So that region is also secured by the Mesopotamian army. Then they turn back, which means they turn north. And they came to Ein Mishpat, that is Kadesh. Now, Kadesh is the place which Moses and the Israelis camp out in preparation to enter the promised land in the second year after they left Egypt. Now, that was a failed attempt to enter the Promised Land, but it was the southern entry point. Now, many of the commentators put Kadesh north and west of where I think it's located. I actually think it's about halfway down toward the Gulf of Aqaba from the southern end of the Dead Sea. And that, I believe, matches some of the chronologies and some of the movements much better, including this one right here. Because what we know is this group comes down the King's Highway, which travels down into this area just north of the Gulf of Aqaba, where it will eventually jump on an east-west road heading toward Egypt itself. So once they break into this flat land that is between the Gulf of Aqaba and the southern part of the Dead Sea, that's where they hook northward again. And that seems to be where Kadesh is. And so what do? They defeated all the country of the Amalekites and also the Amorites who were dwelling in Hazazon Tamor. Now, Hazazon Tamor has another name elsewhere in Scripture. It is called En-Gedi. And we know exactly where En-Gedi is. En-Gedi is on the east side, excuse me, the west side of the Dead Sea, and it's on the north basin of the Dead Sea. So what's happened here, if you put it on a map, and you can get your own map and see this, the army of Mesopotamia has come down the royal highway, which they have secured all along the eastern side of the Jordan Valley and the Dead Sea. Then they went another day's travel south from there and broke into the flatlands between the Gulf of Aqaba and the Dead Sea itself, and they turned northward, and they secured all of that region to the southwest and then on the west side of the south basin of the Dead Sea area. And by doing this, they have effectively surrounded the five cities of the Dead Sea Plain, or the Valley of Sidom, the place where they were growing all their crops. And now, having secured everything they needed, they attack the actual cities themselves, which prompts a response, a defensive response, from the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah, etc. Genesis 14:8. Then the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Admah, the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar, went out and they joined battle in the valley of Siddim, which I'm going to again emphasize, I believe we're talking about the south basin area of the Dead Sea. I think that's where those five cities were located. We know pretty certainly where Zoar is. It's off on the south east corner of what used to be the south basin of the Dead Sea. The Israelis and the Jordanians are slowly drying out all of that south basin in order to harvest all of the chemicals, all of the elements that are in that area so that they could use it to help their economies out. And I believe that's where these cities used to be. And what we see when we go to Israel is we're seeing the destruction effect of what happened to those five cities and how it changed, apparently, even the weather patterns long-term in order to keep that whole lower Jordan Valley, Dead Sea area very dry. And the only way you grow things there is by bringing water in from the sides, from other sources. Now, back to the story of the battle. So they joined battle in the Valley of Siddim with Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of Goyim, Amraphel, king of Sinar, and Arioch, king of Elasar, four kings against five. Now, the Valley of Siddim was full of bitumen pits. So that's what I was talking about earlier, that they harvested this bitumen out of the sea and out of these pits and sold it. So this is part of their wealth. But it is also dangerous. If any of you have ever gone to Los Angeles, you may have gone to the La Brea Tar Pits. That's what you should be thinking about, is a place where oil has bubbled out of the crust and up to the surface in such a way that it is easy for animals and, as we're about to find, people to get stuck in it. And if you don't have help getting out of it, you can die. It's not a good situation. So the Valley of Siddim was full of bitumen pits, and as the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, some fell into them, and the rest fled to the hill country. So the five cities of the plain, their forces are not strong enough. They get broken. They are routed. Some of their leaders even get stuck in these tar pits, and they have to be helped out. And people are running away to the hill country, by which it seems as if we're talking about Moab to the east and Canaan to the west. And so the enemy took all the possessions of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way. So they collect tribute by force. They go into these abandoned cities and take their stuff. And that includes at least some of the people. Because the intention here is to basically force these five kings back into the agreement that they were living under before. And so if you take hostages, then that will be a fait accompli. They will have to comply in order to get their people back safe and sound. But they made a really big mistake. Verse number 12, they also took Lot, the son of Abram's brother, who was dwelling in Sodom, and his possessions, and went their way. So we had started in the previous chapter with the idea that Lot was wealthy enough that he could not stick around with his uncle, and so they agreed that they would split. Abram was quite kind to him and said, "You pick, and I'll go the other direction." But Lot looked at the prosperity, the greenery in the Jordan Valley, and chose that. And he not only chose to live there, he even eventually made the choice to live in Sodom City itself. And as we'll discover later, it will break his heart just how bad it is in that city as time goes on. But in this case, he gets grabbed, taken hostage. And the kings then, that is the Mesopotamian kings, take all of their booty, take all of the stuff they've collected, all the people they've collected, and they start traveling north again. So they travel north along the Jordan Valley, and then eventually they'll get back up to the Sea of Galilee, and then they will get back on the road that will take them back to Mesopotamia. And that will take them right past what will eventually be the city of Dan. At this time, it has a different name. But they will pause when they're near that city of Dan. Verse 13. Then one who had escaped, that is, from the battle, from the plundering of the cities of the plain, came and told Abram the Hebrew, who was living by the oaks or the terebinth trees of Mamre the Amorite. So he's a Canaanite, but he is a friend now, an ally of Abram, brother of Eshcol and of Aner. They were allies of Abram. They were literally lords of covenant. So they had made some sort of sacrificial ceremony where the four of them were on each other's side. It was a mutual assistance pact that if I need your help, you have to help me. If you need my help, I will help you. So the word gets to Abram, hey, your nephew has been grabbed by these kings of Mesopotamia. He's being held hostage, and they're taking him back. They're all heading north. They've taken all sorts of stuff from the cities of the plain. So when Abram heard that his kinsmen had been taken captive, he led forth his trained men, think of these guys as militia, born in his house, 318 of them, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. Now, 318, at first glance, may not seem like an awful lot of people against a five-king army. But you've got to remember, this is around 2100 BC. This is a long time ago. And so the world population was much less than it is today. Today we talk about 8 billion, but in the first century, we're reasonably certain that the population was probably less than what's in the United States today, so about 300 million or less. That was the entire world population in the time of Jesus. So this is still another 2,000 years before that. And so the world population is certainly less than 100 million. And so these kings are over cities that are probably only thousands of people. And their military is probably going to be hundreds and a few thousands of guys. So 318 soldiers, militia guys under Abram starts making much more sense as being significant. And it wasn't just him. His three friends, his three allies are going to kick in their own militia people. And so we are probably talking about a militia force between the four of them approaching 1,000. Or somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000. So not a bad response force to go after these guys. Plus, of course, the Abrahamic bless and curse promise of God. I will bless those that bless you and curse those who curse you. So Dan is a good 3 to 4 days travel north of Jerusalem. And so Hebron is another day south of there. So Abram and his friends and their military, they get on the ball and they catch up and spy the Mesopotamian forces near Dan, near the headwaters of the Jordan River. And so what does Abram do? Says he divided his forces against them by night, he and his servants, and he defeated them. So Abram is acting as the general of this militia force from down by Hebron. And so he does something that did not happen all that often in the ancient world, and that was carry out a night operation. So he attacks them by night. They break. They are routed. And he begins chasing these routed forces even farther north. And he pursued them to Hobah, which is north of Damascus. Damascus is a good 40 miles northeast from Dan. And once he has broken that army up, I mean, he's probably killed a whole bunch of them, and broken up their whole purpose of being here, which was to reestablish themselves as a force to be reckoned with in the southern Jordan Valley. He then starts gathering up all of the stuff that they'd stolen and all the people they had stolen. Verse 16, then he brought back all the possessions and also brought back his kinsman Lot with his possessions and the women and the children. And so he is now traveling back south again. He's actually heading back to Hebron, but he's going to make a stopover at a very special place called Salem. And that part of the story, I think, is really helpful in understanding Abram in Canaan.